wants to change things too much too fast. You get the point. They don't want to change things too much too fast. We have been through that in the 60s. And then Blaine makes this point. He said the British people at times come to points where they don't want to be improved. They want to be deemed good point. I'll get the example. Now that's what we're having. You know, Rockefeller was in here with a whole lot of things. And Ehrlichman's staff, of course, has been able to be improved. And Rockefeller's got to have these exciting new developments here. Now maybe the American people right now have reached a point where they just don't want to be improved. I just see that my point.
I don't know how you articulate it, but you
some way I feel that.
Sure. You go on and you see more excitement by saying we've had enough and then we've had too much. And now's the time to quit the experiment. Back at it themselves. Quit the experiment.
That's right.
Lop off the experiments that didn't work, which nobody's ever done before. We say they're experiments, but they become locked in and go on experimenting forever. A few of the experiments did work. We'll keep those.
Yeah. But you take on CAP. The one thing I have, I know he's making a study of the budget. The one thing I am a little concerned with about him is whether he is so city-oriented that he may, not just from an ideological standpoint, be willing to look at the things that I really want to look at. You know what I am what I am against. I am against HEW, and I am against HUD, and I am against OEO. And that's the kind of crap that I want to throw out.
I think Cap, all you have to do is say it about that tone and about that long to Cap. You don't have to make a speech. I think one sentence. And then Cook will just make sure he understands that point. And that he knows you meant it. Finally smoked them out too, which is kind of interesting. John Davies, who has been our contact, wouldn't return a phone call for a month, August 22nd until last night before last. And in that call, when he called back, he said, say, I've been moved, I'm moving my responsibility, I'm going to be dealing more with the government work side of polling now, and I'd like to talk to you about that. Gordon Strachan that he talks to, and I told Gordon, there's some questions and some of the stuff he covered with him, and I told Gordon to call him back on those questions, and to very, just on a straightforward basis, but very firmly say, incidentally, it took me a month to get my phone call answered from you last time. It's taking me whatever long it takes on this next call to get an answer. Just let's, you know, we may be able to talk, we may be, not be able to talk later, but if you aren't going to answer my calls, we aren't going to be able to answer yours either.
Gallup wants, is asking about the government work. Well, that's nice. That's nice.
Sir, so we're pointing out some realities to them. But See, they're so goddamn chicken shit. They're not like Harris. Harris couldn't care less.
Or
he wants the money.
Right.
And the tide, and the tide of power.
They want to be...
Gallup wants to be holier than thou.
He wants to be...
Jack Anderson. Or Jack...
Fine, I think she
we can raise the revenues here, then there's drop.
Look,
we haven't done enough with this. Believe me, that's that Gavin letter, that thing that was just right on the rock. These guys raised the point with me. I agree with their point. And the goddamn networks are killing the goose that lays the golden eggs, and they say, and they're making money. Bullshit. Let's quit crapping around the bush. They come in here, they're not the goose bush. That's great. My old
networks don't make money.
That's too bad.
The way to get out. Sell.
The only way they make money is by the stations they own. And that's the one I'd like to see. It starts scaring them on. Forcing separation of networks and station ownership. That's where you really get it. Because the stations take them in.
And I've got the,
it's each network owns
one of the seven
stations or whatever.
Right.
It is.
And the guy is calling them.
Yeah.
We've done that.
That's a pity. There isn't anything that can go wrong.
Well,
there isn't.
Economically, nothing.
Economically, nothing. That's too, it moves too slowly, and the die is cast.
Part of the world situation, the wars.
Anything that happens there is to your advantage.
We know
your disadvantage. Including a major North Vietnamese attack. That'll show the intransigence of the North Vietnamese. It'll show that they are our friends. We can't say that reason with them. Especially with the ground where you go, with Henry running all over, trying to patch it together.
Right.
Middle East blows up, that's good. It's good, but it can't undo anything. Big story about the Chinese, I mean the Russians passing on the Chinese border again. So what if the Russians move into China? Or something blows up there, someone shoots something off accidentally. All that's going to do is focus stuff on world health. You had a Suez crisis go to 80-20.
I think so.
It would.
Because we deal with it.
That we find people, that there is, that the world isn't at peace, that all this sweetness and light is, you know, we've made progress, but we haven't solved it yet. I don't see how anything could go wrong.
Hi, Henry. I guess I called. See how you got along.
Who won?
I think I got a country boy. Please, can I get you a little coffee? Where would you want it? Consomme.
Consomme would be.
Can I have some
consomme? Dealings with Moscow and Peking, that Europe is the cornerstone of our foreign policy. sure what is this specific plan that you can be sure that you will be in intimate contact with these leaders. They said, well, what do you have in mind? I said, well, I gave a long philosophic disposition how things have changed since the 60s. That you're now in a year of totally new diplomacy, and that the president never believes you can rest on what has been
said.
I got the economic thing in. I said there have to be a new basis for economic relationship. And it had a lot of interest. You know, I mentioned it in passing.
It isn't something that affects people particularly, but all the sophisticates will know that it's got that important, because we all know the name of it's enormous.
It will probably be a second story in the newspapers.
Yeah, that's good.
And it also will shut up McGovern in so far as it still makes any difference in saying you're neglecting Europe, if you say.
Sure. That is, we're neglecting Europe.
But yeah, McGovern's going to pull all the troops out of Europe. How do you neglect it worse than that?
Now, on the Soviet thing, let me first give you a history. My bishop was raised.
Did you just start my statement?
No, I made a statement first. So let me give you the context of this. On the last day, the Secretary General and the President discussed the fact that most of
you
the...
You call him Secretary General.
Well, you can call him both.
It's easier for us to say the Secretary General. It's easier for you. I just wonder.
Decided that all the results of the summit, I thought I'd get it in again, had really been achieved through their direct channel. And therefore, there should be a continuous possibility that when negotiations on a number of subjects had reached a point where their direct intervention was needed to give them a big advance, that then they should supplement the exchanges that are already going on all the time by letter, by some means of personal contact between the President and the General Secretary. That point was reached in August when a number of things had reached a point where we thought that a big decision could move them. And so...
The presidential advisor history today reported significant progress on our intuition with the Soviets when they made a separate claim of negotiation for the Vietnam.
Oh, that's exactly
right. He didn't send them away at him, which is a success.
And
Right.
So then I said they had reached a point for the president. Before I went there, sent a number of mental communications to president to, for example, the economic field, how to relate all these issues to each other on European security and mutual force reduction. I explained what the problem was, that there had been a sort of a stalemate in the discussions, and the President suggested a way it might be solved. I gave them a lot of general talk. So therefore, when I got there, we could go right on the cases. And said I'd been on the economic negotiations, which took the longest, was in constant touch with the President. And then some major progress had been made, but I didn't give them any dates. I just gave them categories in which progress had been made. And they didn't press me, strangely, not very hard. And they said, why wasn't Kosygin at the meeting? So I said, well, the next press conference, the president gives, so I should ask him that question. Then on Vietnam, what I did on Vietnam was I didn't want to claim any progress because these guys would go on the wall. I said, I'll let results speak for themselves. And they said, well, what do you want? And I said, about five times, we want to end the war rapidly. I want you to know a rapid end of the war is our primary aim. I'm going to take these out now, the transcripts, and send them to Lee Dutrow. Because now they're public. Because one thing that Lee Dutrow kept asking me is, if you really want to end the war rapidly, if you want to end it rapidly, I'll make my preparations at the same service. They're swimming. They are really swimming. we have one problem, Mr. President. The Qatar Israelis have moved a battalion into Lebanon. And I think I ought to call their charge and tell him, now this has to stop. Because you're going to get a blow up from the Egyptians. You're going to get another demarche. I think we have to tell them that we've done everything for them. I mean, for them to do this a day before I go to Russia and the day after I leave looks like absolute collusion.
Also, you know, another thing that I hope they start with, they ought to quit trying to knock down this idiocy, the effect that they're trying to block, that some senators of Congress will block the trade agreements because of the persecution or the failure to get exit visas for Israeli or Jewish people. Jesus Christ. That's ridiculous.
Mr. President, if a foreign country started bringing pressure on us with respect to Angela Davis, we'd be climbing walls.
Of course. Well, I think you've gone and told them that, but will it do any good?
Yes, if it comes from you, it will.
All right. He's got to know that this is we consider this very. Let them play their game. Somebody else don't have to, but what do they do? Turn up the government.
After you put the resolution.
Yeah.
But we had the Egyptian quieted down. We had secret talks set up with them. Not that we won, apparently, but still it gave us an option. We've had a scorching note from them now on the last Israeli raid.
From the Egyptians?
Yeah. I mean, we cannot let the Israelis. I mean, what happened in Munich was an outrage, but I don't think the Egyptians had anything to do with it.
Of course they did.
I don't think, nor did the Syrians.
Oh, hell no.
Now, I can see one retaliation.
Well, they did one. They knocked the bomb the hell out of
them. I don't know whether today is a retaliation or whether they had some provocation. So that's the, I'd like to call that Israeli Shadre and tell him now.
Yeah.
I want to warn him.
Why don't you, you just want to tell him to warn the lady?
Yep.
On behalf of the Baha'is, because we'll have greater concern. Well, it's so stupid for the news.
Mr. President, without you, they would have been dead. You remember how many times Rogers and Laird were in here to cut our way, how in February 1971 they wanted you to take them on publicly on the Yaring mission.
Yeah.